नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading a whole bunch of verses today, beginning with text 9. Kyatva putrasya tat karma guruna viditam nipaha desani sarayamasa sutam tvaktva vidhim rusa. Please chant. When King Ikshvaku, thus informed by Vasishta, understood what his son Vikukshi had done, he was extremely angry. Thus he ordered Vikukshi to leave the country because Vikukshi had violated the regulated principles. Having been instructed by the great learned Brahmanas, Vasishta, who discoursed about the absolute truth, Maharaj Ikshvaku became renounced. By following the principles of a yogi, he certainly achieved the supreme perfection after giving up his material body. After his father's disappearance, Vikukshi returned, it's a tough name, returned to the country and thus became the king, ruling the planet Earth and performing various sacrifices to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vikukshi later became celebrated as Sasada. I wonder if he preferred having a name that was easier to pronounce. The son of Sasada was Puranjaya, who was also known as, let me take the glasses off, Indravaha, and sometimes as Kakuksta. Please hear from me how he received different names for different activities. Formerly, there was a devastating war between the demigods and the demons. The demigods, having been defeated, accepted Puranjaya as their assistant and then conquered the demons. Therefore, this hero is known as Puranjaya, he who conquered the residents of the demons. Puranjaya agreed to kill all the demons on the condition that Indra would be his carrier. Because of pride, Indra could not accept this proposal. But later, by the order of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Indra did accept it and became a great bull carrier for Puranjaya. So he was a little, like, this is below my my job description. Indra was thinking that, you know, like some people say, we don't wash pots or something like that, don't wash clean windows. So he was saying, I'm Indra, why should I be a bull carrier? But because he's a devotee and Vishnu ordered him, then he did it. Okay, a few more verses. Well protected by armor and desiring to fight, Puranjaya took up a transcendental bow and very sharp arrows. And while being highly praised by the demigods, he got up on the back of the bull, Indra, and sat on its hump. Thus he is known as Kakuksta. Being empowered by Lord Vishnu, who is the super soul and the supreme person, Puranjaya sat on the great bull and is therefore known as Indravaha. Surrounded by the demigods, he attacked the residents of the demons in the west. So names often carried with them meaning. Actually, names generally have meanings, but sometimes we forget the meaning behind them. Even in the west, you know, a name like Mary or various, Peter, they're actually named after, usually after religious people in some way or another, but over the years they kind of lost their significance. There was a fierce battle between the demigods and Puranjaya. Indeed, it was so fierce that when one hears about it, one's hairs stand on end. All the demons, bold enough to come before Puranjaya, were immediately sent to the residence of Yamaraj by his arrows. To save themselves from the blazing arrows of Indravaha, which resembled the flames of devastation at the end of the millennium, the demons who remained when the rest of their army was killed fled quickly to their respective homes. After conquering the enemies, the saintly King Puranjaya gave everything, including the enemy's riches and their wives to Indra, who carries the thunderbolt. For this he is celebrated as Paranjaya. Thus, Paranjaya is known by different names because of his different activities. The sons of Paranjaya were known as Anena. Anena's sons was Prithu, and Prithu's sons, son was Vishvagandhi. Vishvagandhi's sons was Chandra, and Chandra's sons was Yuvanashva. The son of Yuvanashva was Shravasta, who constructed a township known as Shravastipuri. The sons of Shravasta was Brihadasva, and his son was Kuvalayasva. In this way, the dynasty increased. It's sometimes mentioned that these names, and this is just one instance, there's many other instances in the ninth canto, that the list of names are there for a reason. Because, you know, we read them, and it's like, you know, who's Yudvanashva? Right? Anyone know? No? So, but these were great people. I mean, they ruled kingdoms. When people, you know, if they raised their eyebrows, people would shiver in fright. Yet, they're just a list of names in the ninth canto. So the realization one's supposed to get when one reads these names of these kings is how temporary life is and how insignificant we are. Because these are actually significant people. How many of us are going to make it into the, into the Bhagavatam and our names mentioned in the Bhagavatam? Right? Raise your hand. Okay. Prabhuji? So it's unlikely, to say the least. But we just read them like, you know, okay, we've got to go through these 20 verses up to, where there's actually a purport. And we just, and that's the nature of this world. We are actually insignificant, as painful as that may sound. And even in the spiritual world, all the big positions are taken eternally. You can't become Lalita or Vishaka or Sudhama. You know, all the big, big posts are taken eternally. You can only become, you know, dasa, da, we can only become dasa, 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 anudas. But fortunately for us, as mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, there is a concept with a devotee of mamatva. And that is that even if we're servants of the servants of the servants of the servants, you know, so many times removed, the experience is that Krishna is mine. So although we may be removed in that sense, every devotee in the spiritual world has this understanding of mamatva, especially in Vrindavan, that Krishna is mine. Right? In our stage of devotional service, we think more tadiya, I'm Krishna's. And that's a proper mood of devotion, I'm Krishna's servant. But actually when we enter into Braj in our siddha dehas, we'll have this consciousness of mamatva. So we don't have to worry that, you know, we can't become Champakalata or any of these big, big names. It's not a problem. We can become servants of them and directly experience Krishna. So don't worry, even if your name doesn't make it into the Bhagavatam. To satisfy the sage, Utanka, the greatly powerful Kuvalayasva, killed a demon named Dundhu. He did this with the assistance of his 21,000 sons. O Maharaj Parikshit, for this reason, Kuvalayasva is celebrated as Dundumara, the killer of Dundu. All but three of his sons, however, were burnt to ashes by the fire emanating from Dundu's mouth. The remaining sons were Dridhasva, Kapilasva, and Bhadrasva. From Dridhasva came a son named Haryashva, we've heard of him, right? Whose son is celebrated as Nikumba. The son of Nikumba was Bahulasva. The son of Bahulasva was Krishashva. The son of Krishashva was Senajit. The son of Senajit was Yudvanashva. Yudvanashva had no sons, and thus he retired from family life and went to the forest. Two more verses. Although Yudvanashva went into the forest with his 100 wives, all of them were very morose. The sages in the forest, however, being very kind to the king, began very carefully and attentively performing an Indra Yajna so that the king might have a son. So this is what I was told to read up to, because there's a very short purport, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to follow authority. I'm going to read one more verse. You'll see why. So here's Srila Prabhupada's short purport. One may enter the Vanaprastha order of life with his wife, but the Vanaprastha order means complete retirement from household life. Although King Yudvanashva retired from family life, he and his wives were always morose because they had no son. So, you know, having son, that business is supposed to be finished by the time you were Vanaprastha. But here we're going to hear something very interesting. Being thirsty one night, the king entered the arena of sacrifice. And when he saw all the brahmanas lying down, he personally, what did he do? He drank the water. And who was the water meant for? And why was it meant for his wife? To get a son. So he drank it. He became pregnant. Purport. So this is what we're going to talk about this morning. Yajnas performed by brahmanas according to Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are so potent that the sanctifying of water by Vedic mantras can bring about the desired result. In this instance, the brahmanas sanctified the water so that the king's wife might drink it in the yajna. But by providence, the king himself went there at night and, being thirsty, drank the water. So were the brahmanas spaced out? Why didn't they hide the water better? Right? I mean, if it was such important water that was going to make someone pregnant and fulfill the king's dreams, one could argue that they should have put it in a safer place, so that no one would come along and drink it. Or, as mentioned in this verse, was it the will of providence? And what is the will of providence? So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this word, providence. And it's used in different ways, so it's a little complicated. So I know you were up late last night and you may be tired, but try to listen. We have to be careful, first of all. The first instruction is we should be careful not to use the will of providence as an excuse. Right? You know, you just lost a wad of 10,000 rupees. It fell out of your pocket when you were outside on Sankirtan and you tell the temple president. It's Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. Right? So here's an interesting little exchange Srila Prabhupada had with a very colorful devotee. Maybe some of you know him, Vishal Prabhu, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada says, "It is the grace of providence that you do not see that it is properly cleaned." Vishal, "I'm sorry, I will see to that." Prabhupada, "Yes." Vishal, "Your divine grace, that is my fault." Prabhupada, "Why there is water? This water means the shoes, dirt, it will be dirty. So you have no eyes to see?" Vishal, "I am blind, I am sorry. I will see that it is clean for you." Prabhupada, "Then become with eyes, simply praying what you will do." Because Vishal was known to, when Prabhupada would walk by, he would say verses in glorification of the spiritual master or say Jai Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada's kind of getting on his case here that, you know, do something practical. He said, "Simply praying, what will you do? Do something practical." And Harikesh Prabhu says, "This is the argument people always throw at us. Simply praying, what will you do? Do something practical." They say this all the time. Prabhupada, "Everyone will say that. Krishna says everything is practical. He never says that you press your nose and everything will come. He never says like that. You become a yogi by pressing your nose and keep your head downward and then you'll become perfect and everything will come. He never says. And Arjuna also never accepts anything impractical. That is Bhagavad Gita." And Prabhupada goes on to tell the story about how Arjuna said, "To control the mind, give me some better instruction, too impractical." Right? So, to use providence or Krishna's mercy in a flippant way, as an excuse for our lack of attention. And lack of attention for devotees means our lack of devotion. Right? A devotee, an external show of our devotion is our attention to details. That's part, not all of it, but that's a very, very important part of being a devotee, is being attentive while we're chanting, everything, being attentive to the details of devotional service. Yet still here we say, we don't hear that the brahmanas were spaced out. We hear that it was the will of providence. So what do we mean by providence? Well, we're going to explain perhaps four different ways that we can describe it. That's why it's a little complicated. But in general, we can say that when we use that term, or when Srila Prabhupada uses that English term, he means that things that are beyond our control. Okay? Right? That's what we say. Something that, you know, the will of providence, it means something that is not within our grasp to control. So sometimes it refers to Ati Daivik, the activities of the demigods. Srila Prabhupada writes, the threefold miseries are, one, in relationship to the body and mind. What's that called? Adiatmik, okay. Number two, in relation with our dealings with other living beings. Adibhoti. And three, in relation to acts of providence, on which we have no control. So he uses the word providence here. We used to have an affectionate joke about our temple president, Adiraj Prabhu. He's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada's, and he wrote a cookbook. And we used to sometimes say, because he would order us around so much and we weren't very submissive, we would say that there was a fourth klesh, Adiraja. Anyway, that's... But it was done with affection. It wasn't done with criticism. Okay, so that's one. One is, you know, just acts by the demigods. Are those within our control? Are they within our control? Can we control the weather outside today? Or the rain that came yesterday? I hope it didn't hurt the books. The books were all covered? Yeah, okay. Yeah, we were concerned about that. Okay, so now, the second definition of providence. Karma. So here we here's again from Srila Prabhupada. We can see that the process of performing fruitive activities, how do you translate fruitive activities into Sanskrit? Karma. An experience, their results, is like a mammoth tree sprouting endless branches and twigs. Can the performer of actions who experiences the endless fruits of that mammoth, what does mammoth mean? Huge. That mammoth tree ever enjoy peace and benedictions? No. Therefore it is said, in the dispensation of providence, mankind cannot have any rest. So often, Prabhupada, when he's using the word providence, is referring to our karma. It's providence that this happened to us. It's providence that that happened to us. The will of providence. So that's one of the main definitions of providence. Okay, now, ready? Number three. Providence can also refer, especially in our lives as devotees, to Krishna's mercy. Okay, and here's a very famous verse that was often quoted, especially you see devotees quote this in their Vyasa Puja offerings to Srila Prabhupada. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. So this is providence in a very spiritual sense. My understanding as I read this is that the devotee is saying this. Who's saying this? Yeah, Shonaka and the Rishis, right? Yes. That we didn't deserve this. When someone thinks of Krishna's mercy, they think, or we sometimes use the word causeless. right? That mercy is causeless. So they're saying, we didn't deserve this. But it is by the will of providence, in this sense, by Krishna's causeless mercy, that we have met your grace. And so for all of us, it's like that. You know, we didn't deserve. There's nothing that we have done specifically to deserve to come in touch with Srila Prabhupada's teachings, to come to be able to see Shri Radha Gopinath every day. But it is the will of providence, in the sense that it is the will of the Lord. Sometimes devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada, there's that verse, Yesham Tvantak Tathapapam, Jananam Punyakarmanam, right? What's it? Te Dvandva Moha Nimurta, is that right? Vajante Mam, is that right? Tridavata. So that verse says that unless you performed piety, you can't take up devotional service. So they asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, and what did Srila Prabhupada reply to that? Because the devotee is saying, how did we, what did we do? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada said, I created your punya. So here's another definition of providence. Now finally, providence is used in a very, very exalted way. Many times in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam and quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in talking about the mood of the gopis. And they're of course, you could say it fits into one of these other three categories, but we could also say that it's the this way providence is referring to yoga maya. And here's a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The gopis are speaking. O providence, you have no mercy. You bring embodied souls together through friendship and affection. But before their desires are fulfilled, you separate them. Your activities are like the foolish pranks of children. In Prabhupada's short purport, he says this verse, which is from the 10th canto, was chanted by the damsels of Braja when Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura with Akura and Balaram. The gopis lamented that providence had made it possible for them to meet Krishna and Balaram in affection and love and had then separated them. So it's a little tricky. This word providence is used in different ways in different ways in Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And it's difficult sometimes because probably there would be different words in Sanskrit, but here we're using an English term. So, but whatever exact definition we have, we can take the will of providence to help us in our devotional service, to surrender to Krishna. This we see in the pastimes of Gajendra. Okay? So here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. When the king of the elephants, who's that? Very good. Saw that he was under the clutches of the crocodile by the will of providence, and being embodied and circumstantially helpless, he could not save himself from danger, and he was extremely afraid of being killed. He consequently thought for a long time and finally reached the following decision. And what was that decision? That he would surrender to Krishna. So, we don't blame, as devotees, we are very careful not to blame providence. It's the conditioned soul's nature to blame others. It was him or her, right? That's our tendency. And we don't think of our own lackings. And providence can be sometimes complicated. Take this, for example, very famous passage from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? Where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, at first, all the followers of Advaita Acharya shared a single opinion. But later, they followed two different opinions as ordained by providence. Okay. And then the next verse says, some of the disciples strictly accepted the orders of the Acharya, and others deviated, independently concocting their own opinions under the spell of Daivi Maya. So, and then in the purports, Prabhupada is talking about how some of his godbrothers were not so sincere, that they fought with each other, and they neglected the spiritual master's instructions, and therefore they became asara. What does asara mean? Useless. Very strong words. But if it's the will of providence, why criticize them? Right? This is a little tricky. Right? On one hand, Krishnadas Kaviraj is saying providence, and the next verse, Daivi Maya. Right? And at the same time, he's saying they deviated, concocting their own opinions. So then we might read this and say, well, when we make mistakes, it's Daivi Maya. Actually, it's Yoga Maya, Prabhuji. You don't understand how exalted I am. So it's a little complicated. But the point is that things can often be looked at from different perspectives. There's not just one way to look at something. I'll look at something from a certain angle, just like Loki Sabji. Raise your hand if you like Loki. Okay. I don't like Loki at all. So, Prabhuji, what's your name, Prabhu? Damodar Prabhu. So if Damodar Prabhu sees Loki Sabji, he's looking at the same Sabji as I'm looking at, correct? Right? So he looks at Loki Sabji and says, oh, Krishna's mercy. He's a kitchen. He's also in charge of the kitchen. Is there Loki today? Oh, okay. He doesn't know. Okay. Anyway. So he sees Loki Sabji and he thinks, you know, he might think it's my mercy because I'm in charge of the kitchen. So he may think it's his own mercy. But actually, you know, he'll see it as Krishna's mercy. And I'll look at Loki Sabji and I'll say, is there anything else besides Loki Sabji today? Like, we're looking at the same thing, but we have a different perspective. So that's not, of course, a great example. But even in the Bhagavad Gita, there's different levels of God realization mentioned, right? So we're all, or that verse, Vedanti tat tattva vidas tatvat yaj gyanam avyam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabje. So we're all looking at the absolute truth. But some of us are seeing it as Brahman, some as Paramatma, some as Bhagavan. So there's different perspectives. Just like we go through some difficulty in our life. We break our leg, right? And we're thinking, oh, you know, the marathon's coming up. I want to distribute so many books and this and that. And I broke my leg. And then a devotee comes up to us. So Damodar Prabhu preaches to Raja Bihari Prabhu, not this, the other one. And he says to Prabhuji, you know, why are you lamenting? This is Krishna's mercy. Right? And Raja Bihari says, I'll give you a little bit of Krishna's mercy. Right? Because we're looking at it from a different angle, from a different perspective. So here also, on one hand, it's the will of providence. But that doesn't mean that those people who didn't follow Advaitacharya were doing the right thing just because they were following the will of providence. From another angle, they were doing the wrong things. They were deviated and they were concocting their own opinions. So we have to also apply that in our own lives. That as you know, this wonderful passage by Srila Prabhupada with Vishal Prabhu, that we have to be good devotees. We have to, we don't blame others. And we don't blame the material situation. And we also don't try to necessarily immediately change the material situation. That material situation may also be the will of providence, our karma. And karma is very interesting for devotees. Okay? Because in the 10th chapter of the Nectar of Devotion, right in the that's what Techniques of Hearing and Chanting, I think it's called, right? And there's one passage expecting the Lord's mercy, and there Prabhupada is quoting Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is quoting the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, which is Tatenu Kampam Suksham Mikshamano, right? That a famous verse that says that the devotee, when difficulties happen to the devotee, with the devotee's heart, with his mind, with his body, he offers obeisances to the Lord and thinks that actually because of my karma, because of that will of providence, I should have gotten much worse. But by Krishna's mercy, he is minimized, and therefore I offer my heartfelt obeisances to the Lord. And one who has that, so this is very important now. Now you see how important the will of providence is in our devotional life. Because jiveti yo mukti pade sadayabak, one who has that consciousness automatically goes back to Godhead. So when difficulties happen to us, we take it as the will of providence in the sense, this is my karma. The fan's still going, even if it's unplugged for some time, right? It's still going. I don't blame Krishna. That is the proof of our envy of Krishna, when we still blame him. Why is Krishna, I chanted such nice rounds yesterday. Why this is happening to me? Right? But a devotee doesn't blame Krishna, accepts it as one's karma, and bows down to the Lord, and goes on with one's devotional service. So, this is such an important understanding of the will of providence, that we don't blame the Lord, we accept what we have coming to us, and we transform that into an opportunity for devotional service. It's kind of like there's a martial arts called Aikido. There's Kung Fu, there's different things. Aikido takes the energy of the opponent's attack and uses it for one's own... one uses that energy to combat the enemy. So we take whatever karma is coming to us and we turn it around into devotional service. And therefore that will of providence, which may be our karma, gets used and seen as Krishna's mercy. A different angle on the word providence. Then life becomes exciting. I mean, in a positive sense. Exciting is the wrong word. Life becomes interesting, an adventure. Because as a devotee wakes up every morning and wonders what... That sees the hand of Krishna in his or her daily activities. And so what does Krishna have in store for me today? And how can I have whatever happens to me and utilize that to better serve Shishi Radha Gopinath? So then life becomes, interesting. Even a low-key subji appears. And one says, oh, thank you, Krishna. This is my opportunity to understand that prasadam is absolute. And I'll take this low-key subject to my full satisfaction, even if it may not be my favorite. And there's so many low-key subjects happen to us. Right? So was it providence? Should the brahmanas have hid the water better? So many things, but the brahmanas could say, okay, next time we should do, they could also vow to serve the Lord better. Next time I'm going to hide that water better. Right? And the king, he accepted it as the will of the Lord, and things end up working out. But this is the mood of a devotee, trying to see the hand of the Lord in our day-to-day lives. So, some questions? Comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, how do we actually balance this? Because On the one hand, we say it's Krishna's mercy, and then I also have to resolve to improve so that I don't repeat the mistake. So it's a challenge, actually. Is there some way we could?
It's a challenge. Well, certainly we see what happens to us that is beyond our control. See, this is the point about what's in our control and what's outside of our control. So what happens to us, or if we're scientists, the stimulus, right? There's a stimulus and there's a response, right? You studied that when you were in school, right? So the stimulus may be beyond our control, right? You're offering a ghee lamp and the person behind you burns your kurta, right? So that is beyond your control. That's stimulus. The response is within your control, right? We can get angry, or we can tolerate, right? There's that gap where we decide, sometimes it's a split second, how we are going to respond to that. So what's out of our control, what's in our control are two different things. So when something is we do our best, right? If we have honestly been attentive to details, been devotional in our execution and tried our best, then the result also, of course, is ultimately beyond our control, right? What's that verse? The most famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita that I can't remember? Karma nevarikaraste mafaleshu kadachana. Right? That we do our duty to the best of our abilities and we're mafaleshu. We're not... Then we can, in some ways, be honestly detached from the fruit. But we also know, as devotees, that we can always improve. Right? But we should be careful not to blame, play the blame game. You know, there's that famous saying that if you point one finger at somebody, you're pointing three at yourself. Right? So we should... be careful not to also blame material circumstances for our bad consciousness. Right? Material circumstances should be an impetus for us to take shelter of Krishna. See, often when something difficult happens to us, Krishna often is working on our heart. Our tendency is to immediately want to adjust the material circumstances. Right? But often Krishna is looking for a different kind of adjustment. So just like when Ashwatthama sent the Brahmastra to Arjuna, most of us probably would have wanted the material circumstance to be adjusted immediately. Right? We probably would have done something like, Krishna, help! Right? I hope that didn't wake anybody up. Sorry. And Krishna, please immediately adjust everything. That would have been our tendency. Right? But what did Arjuna do? He said, I think, 6 or 7 beautiful prayers, right, to the Lord. He took shelter. First, he took shelter of the Lord. Tesham sat... No. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Mamanu Samara Yudhyacha. Krishna says, first remember me, then do your duty. So often when these difficulties come, they actually they should be, and this is a test for all of us. How much do we actually see Krishna as our shelter, as our resting place, as our pratishta, the basis of our life? And how much do we immediately think, okay, I'm going to adjust this, adjust that, do this, do that, everything will be taken care of. Oh, yeah, thanks, Krishna, by the way. Right? And even Vidura preached to Dhritarashtra in this way. Right? He said, your whole life has been a life of material adjustments. He was a king. If it's a little cold, someone fans him. A little hungry, someone brings him some food. Right? But he basically said, okay, now everything's, no more material adjustments. Your liver's defective, all those things that he was saying about him. You're blind since birth, and you're like a household dog eating the remnants of Bhima. So, did I answer your question? Yeah? What was your question? The microphone has gone. It's way in the back.
You want to take it to him?
Chandrasekhar, did you want to say something? After? Okay.
Actually, I was just thinking, you know, it's very true that we should not blame Krishna for our, the mess that we'll end up in. At the same time, when things go our way and we are able to get a lot of results, it's also the tendency to think that I am the doer. And that's very difficult to, I feel that's like more difficult because we tend to identify with what we are doing. And then when things go wrong, you know, we can't take it. So how do we ensure that we are not in the consciousness that I am the doer? Because that creeps in very fast. Because, you know, we tend to get results and we do things. So how do we be in the consciousness always?
Well, let me ask you this. How do we affect consciousness in Krishna consciousness? In other words, let's say you're in bad consciousness. What would you do to improve your consciousness? Anyone? Pray? Okay, what else? Chant? And hear, right? So by chanting, Srila Prabhupada says that chanting dissolves the false ego. Those are the words he uses, right? So this is all based on false ego, right? Thinking we're the doer. So chanting, and then hearing. Hearing works on two levels. It redirects the consciousness, right? We hear something. We're thinking one way, and then we hear, oh, we're not the doer, we're Krishna's, you know. And so it adjusts our intelligence, and it also purifies our heart. So, and of course, this question of who's the doer, that's interesting also, because Krishna says, what's the famous verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna really smashes the idea that we're the doer? Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa. Ahankara. Vimudhatma. What does mudha mean? Fool? Ash? Yes. Right. But then, it's very interesting, he says, Chatur Varnyam Mayasristam Guna Karma Vibhagasa Tasyakataram Apimam Vidhi Akataram. He said, oh, I'm not the doer. Right? Doesn't he say that in the fourth chapter? He says, you know, I created the Varnashram, but where you're placed in the Varna wasn't me. So in different places, Krishna is emphasizing different things. In order to deal with a situation like you're talking about, Krishna says, Prakrite Kriyamanani Manani. Right? But we are the doer in another sense. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that if we weren't the doer, why have Shastra telling us do this and don't do that? Why have all these books that Srila Prabhupada wrote telling us this is what we should do, what we shouldn't do, if we're not the doer? So there's different doers, right? But in this point, we're certainly not the only doer, because everything, you know, even this body, we can't move without the demigods helping us, et cetera, et cetera. So we should purify ourselves by hearing and chanting, so that we're not in this consciousness of thinking that I'm the doer. So, you know, we practice it by always saying, oh, it's Guru's mercy, it's Krishna's mercy. But we should keep practicing that, because that's actually fact. Because we, like Arjuna. Arjuna could, you know, talk about thinking yourself the doer. He was a Maharathi, right? Right? And he could practically do anything as far as his Kshatriya Dharma was concerned. And then what happened when Krishna took away that power? Who could he not even defeat? Some coward boy, I mean, like insignificant. You know? And Prabhupada writes in the purport, because those powers are not needed to go back to Godhead. He mentions there. Right? So just like Chandrasekhar Prabhu, do you know Dharma Prana Prabhu in Toronto? Yes? No? I can't tell if that's a yes or no. Yes. So Dharma Prana Prabhu. Maybe you know him. He's come here sometimes, I think. He was an unbelievable book distributor. sharpest mind in the world. I saw him sometimes distributing books in Chicago Airport, and just like, you know, his mind was just so sharp, and he could sell a book to almost anyone. And then one day, when he was still quite young, he had a stroke. And if you know, like we see, Jayapataka Maharaj had a stroke, we see how it's difficult for him to talk. So Dharma Prana Prabhu, to this day, difficulty walking and talking. And so that, somehow by the will of Providence, that was taken away from him. His bhakti wasn't taken away. He's still a wonderful, wonderful devotee. But he couldn't render that service to Krishna anymore, and he was given a different service. So Krishna giveth and Krishna taketh away. And I think we experience this. I think most of us who have done Sankirtan, we sometimes experience kind of like, we used to call it a Vaikuntha bubble. I used to see it sometimes in the airport where you would call somebody over, you know, they might be as far as where Chandrasekhar, excuse me, sir, and they would just somehow come. You know, and you realize it wasn't you. It wasn't you. And sometimes you'd be so empowered to distribute many books, and then other days you're using the exact same techniques, same words coming out of your mouth, and nothing's happening result-wise. So we have to. So in good times and bad times, in success and failure, be devotees. Okay? Chandrasekhar Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu, thank you. Thank you for the very intriguing class. Because it's intriguing, I had two questions. What was the difference of opinion between Advaita's followers, and how can we insert ourselves into Krishna's adventures? How can we make our feel that our life is a part of this Krishna's adventures?
Well, the first question, I'm not sure. Does anyone know if there's details mentioned about what the disagreement was? Three of them became monists, right? Do you remember, Prabhu? Three of them were not personalists. That's a big problem, isn't it? Right? So that's there, but I don't know the exact details.
I wanted to know your perspectives. I know that three of the sons, they over-glorified Advaita, placing him above Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was very upset about that.
Correct.
But I wondered if you knew more.
Yeah, no, I don't know more.
Okay. And then how do we see our life as participating in Krishna's adventure?
This reminds me of verse 57 and 58 of the 18th chapter. Anyone know those by heart? If you become conscious of me, you will cross over all obstacles of material life by my mercy. Yogani mat prasada trishyasi. It's Tuesday, don't worry. Or is it Wednesday? It's Wednesday. Okay. It'll just take a second. I'll get those verses. See if those help us to understand your question. They're such wonderful verses. Some of you guys know? Anyway, these days you don't need to know. You just look in the computer. So 57 is Chetasa Sarva Karmani Mayi Sanyasya Matpara Buddhi Yoga Mupasrita Machchita Satatam Bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Next verse. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. And then also we understand that the essence of sadhana bhakti, given by Rupa Goswami, what is it? It's so important, I can't remember. Always remember me. What's the first word? Smartavya satatam vishnu vismartavya danjatuchit. Sarva vidhi nisedasyor etayor eva kintram. All the other rules and regulations, putting on tilak, wearing a dhoti, this, that, all the things that we do, are kinkaras, they're servants of this principle to always remember Krishna and never forget him. Smartavya, if you're smart, you'll remember Krishna. Right? So, So we should, so how to do that, therefore we know. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. Right? Just like I was talking to a friend of mine last night who's in Vrindavan. And he's only there for 5 or 6 days. And when he's in Vrindavan, he chants a lot of extra rounds. So we were talking on the phone about something practical. And at the end of the call, he said, I don't see how you do it. How can you live in Vrindavan and get anything done practically? Because when I'm in Vrindavan, I just chant all the time. And it's so wonderful. You know, I'm just it helps my remembrance of Krishna so much just by chanting. So, Braj, how do you get anything done? So I joked with him because we work closely on a lot of projects together. And I said, well, because I get all these phone calls from you in America, I can't chant because you're always giving me practical service to do. But actually, the fact is I don't have a taste like he has. But if we, it's such a simple thing that it's almost like we want a more complicated answer. You know, if we just hear and chant about Krishna, we'll remember him. And then when we remember him, we'll see him, in his pastimes, in his name, in his form, his qualities, but also as he directs our practical lives on a day-to-day basis. Is that all right? Okay. Prabhuji, you had a question, yes. I think we need a microphone for you. I think this is the last question, right? Are we going late? Oh, okay.
A comment. He's very excited and happy about the way Prabhupada's altar has been decorated.
Yes.
He says just like Garudji has two wings, Prabhupada is having two beautiful in the garden of Vrindavan.
But the flower decoration, flower tell us that he is flying.
The way altar has been decorated, it appears that Srila Prabhupada is flying in Vrindavan.
This is the will of Providence. But one last thing, you have a question? But one thing that just came to my mind about the will of Providence that I think is really important, and that is that if we misuse that statement, we can actually minimize the glory of great devotees. Let me explain why. If we say that Srila Prabhupada coming at the age of 70, going on the Jaladuta, experiencing two heart attacks, etc. If we just kind of write it off, that's the will of Providence, that's Leela, then we might minimize the fact that he actually did that. In other words, it was Krishna's mercy, but the fact is a 70-year-old person with 40 rupees in his pocket got on a steamship and suffered two heart attacks and went through so many hardships, just like we saw in the video last night before we chanted, that the man was saying about how hard do you work? And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm 79, I'm traveling thrice around the world, that is not hard work, I work much harder than you do. So he actually did that. Yeah, it's not just, in other words, if we just say it's Leela, well, that's his Leela, and we have our Leela, and Leela. But Prabhupada actually underwent those difficulties for us. So we just have to be a little careful. Like we might say, yes, it was the will of Providence that we have this beautiful temple. But in doing that, we might minimize Sri Nafji Prabhu's trials and tribulations, going through all those hardships to get to where we are today. Right? It was a great struggle. And it was a great work on his and Mahaprabhu and other Krishna Chandra and so many devotees' hard work to get this building to be used in the way it is today. So yes, it was of course Krishna's mercy and Krishna empowering them, but it was also their sincerity and their hard work. So that's also important. So last point. Do we have a microphone for Mataji?
It's a little connected to your last point. Because if we're not the doers, then how can there be relationship? How can you actually do something to make Prabhupada happy or Krishna happy? Because that's the exchange, it's personalism.
Right.
And so, but is it that we just desire and make an attempt to do something, you know, physically or mentally or, you know, practically, but then we see the result, whether it comes or not, is up to Krishna?
Well, there's two ways to look at it, from the material way and the spiritual way. Just like, again, providence can be looked at. I didn't mention this, but indirectly, providence materially is people's karma, right? And even in that sense, people aren't the doer. You know, the example that's given, if a five-year-old child sees their father's weights, you know, that are maybe 40 kgs or something like that, and the child is trying to lift it, can the child...